is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hi, this is Coach Steve Moore, and you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and their marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150-plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Coach, I'm no three-point shooter anyway. I was like, well, I'm proud you figured that out. I already knew that, but now you know.
Marty Smith is the head boys varsity coach at Kirby High School in the state of Arkansas. In his career as a head coach, Marty has amassed 820 career wins. His teams have won 18 conference championships and 7 regional championships. Under Coach Smith, the Kirby Trojans have made 19 state tournaments in Arkansas, with 5 Final Fours and 1 championship game appearance. Thanks for checking out the Hoopheads podcast. Our lineup of podcast guests includes some of the top minds in the game across all levels, from grassroots to the NBA. They'll share insights to help you grow as a coach, improve as a player, or enhance your experience of the game as a parent. You'll gain new perspectives on what the best coaches are doing, how they do it, and why they do it. We hope to make you think and challenge you to consider your approach to the game of basketball. Please subscribe to the Hoopheads Pod and leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to the show. Help us grow the game by telling your friends and colleagues about the Hoopheads Podcast so they can give us a listen too. Get your pen and paper ready as you listen to this episode with Marty Smith from Kirby High School in the state of Arkansas. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here without my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight, who is taking care of his young daughter, trying to give his wife a little break. But we are fortunate enough to be joined tonight by Marty Smith from Kirby High School in the state of Arkansas. Marty, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We are excited to have you on and get a chance to dive into your basketball story. Hopefully learn some things that can help our audience and benefit the coaches out there that are trying to improve their craft. Marty, I want to start out by asking you about how you got into the game of basketball when you were a young kid. What made you fall in love with it?
Well, from the time I was probably fourth grade, fifth grade, I really enjoyed it. I was always better at baseball, but I just really enjoyed the game of basketball, playing out in the yard with my neighbors we all just kind of fell in love with it, competing against each other, and then got into high school. And again, I was a better baseball player, but I just always enjoyed being around the game, and had a coach that knew I enjoyed it, and he kind of pushed me, you know, wanted me to try being a coach, and I just would go out and sit on the bench with him during games and go to practices and things like that, and it was just one of those things where I knew that I wanted to do that someday.
What was it about, A, first of all, the game of basketball that you liked as a player, and then B, was it mostly your coach's influence that sort of led you to think that you might have wanted to get into coaching, or was it something else? What was it about, A, playing
that first made you fall in love with the game? And then B, what was it about the idea of eventually making coaching your career that kind of got you thinking that way?
It was, you know, just the intensity of it, you know, the crowd, people showing up. Of course, you know, I went to a small school here in Arkansas, and, you know, it was the only show in town, and everybody showed up for the games, and, you know, it was really a big deal. And then, and once I got on up into, you know, college, even though I was playing baseball, I just always had that, you know, I'd want to go back to my old high school and you know, talk ball and sit, you know, talk to the coach. Like after the game, I'd hang around and visit with him for hours upon hours, you know, and it just seeing how hard he worked, and he had, you know, teams that weren't always the most talented, but they just played so hard. And I just really thought that was something I'd be interested in. You know, I when I started in college, I thought that, you know, I'm going to major in accounting. I'm going to be a business guy. And it didn't take long going to those accounting classes. I'm like, man, this is not something. Of course, you know, I was trying to follow in the footsteps of my older brother. And he had gone there, going to college and got an accounting degree. And of course, he was out making all this money. And I thought, man, that's something I'd really be into. But I just never could get into it. I just dreaded going to school every day. And finally, when I decided, you know, he was a big influence in that too. He told me, he said, man, you need to do something that you're good at, something that you enjoy. You love being around kids and you've always loved basketball. You might want to consider, you know, trying to coach. And I had been thinking that, you know, every time I'd get up at 9 o'clock class for go to accounting one, I was thinking, I do not want to do this. But, I kind of just said, you know, I'm going to go for it. This is something I want to do. And when I went out and told my high school coach that, I went out there and told him I'm going to change my major. And he just grinned. He said, I knew you were. I knew you were going to get to that point. And I said, well, I'm going to depend on you a lot, you know. And he was real instrumental in everything, you know, just trying to set me up. And, you know, he would have to miss practices every now and then to go with his wife to the doctor. And he'd leave me in charge, you know. And here I am, a 19, 20-year-old kid out there, you know, coaching kids that I'm not much older than. And telling them what to do. And he told them, you know, you're going to respect him and you do what he said. And, man, it was awesome. I fell in love with it, and I knew that was my calling. That's what I needed to be doing.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I think how different people come to the coaching profession, and you hear some people that they have kind of a moment when they get done playing and they're like, oh, now I got to figure out how to stay in the game and I want to be a coach. And there's other people who, you know, kind of like you, you had these inklings that I think clearly your high school coach knew that at some point you were going to come back to the coaching profession, even if you didn't necessarily know it. But I think that eventually everybody who gets there, it's just because you have that passion for young people, and then the sport that you love becomes the vehicle to be able to impact young people. And that's what I hear you coming, you know, that's what I hear coming from you, especially it sounds like your high school coach had such a strong influence on you, not just eventually on your coaching career, but just on you as a human being. So I think that when we have somebody in our lives who impacts us in that way, I think that for coaches, that's what ends up, we look back on our lives in sports and we say that person really had an impact on me. And then I want to be able to make and have that same impact on people going forward. So when you started thinking about, you know, when you changed your major from accounting and you knew you wanted to get into coaching, did you always have the idea that I want to be a teacher coach at the high school level? Did you ever have any thought about coaching at a level higher than that? Or did you always know high school is the place where I want to be because that's where my role models were?
I started out, you know, when I first started, you know, I thought, man, I might want to be a college coach. And I kind of toyed with it a little bit. But it was just always, I've never really got real serious about it because I knew that, you know, on the high school level, I could really connect with those kids and I wanted to be around, you know, if I was going to have a family, I wanted to be there, you know, for my kids. And, And of course, you know, recruiting, you're gone a lot and things like that. So I thought about it at one time, and I had a really good friend of mine after my first couple of years of coaching had told me, he said, man, I can get you a grad assistantship at the University of Arkansas if you're interested in it. And my dad was sick with cancer at the time, and I thought about it, you know, and I thought, you know, I really don't need to go that far away. I need to kind of, you know, stay closer for my family. And I didn't go. And it's one of those things where I look back on it now and I think, you know, I might should have done that because they won the national championship in 94. and I might could have been on the bench, you know, and some could, you know, handing out towels water bottles or something like that. But it's not anything that I've really ever, you know, lost a whole lot of sleep over. I'm real happy with the path that I took. You know, it's I've always told people that I could do exactly what I wanted to do in this game from right where I'm at here. And I've been here for, this is just finished my 27th year here, and 29 years of coaching overall. And I've always been at a small school, and it's just been one of those things where I never really considered leaving very many times. It's just been a really good fit for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something we just, right before we talked to you, we talked to Steve Moore, who's the head coach of a Division III school here in Ohio. And he's actually the second all-time winningest coach at the Division III level in NCAA history. And one of the things that we talked to him about was, hey, did you ever have a thought of, obviously with the tremendous success that he had in his program, I said, I'm sure people came knocking at your door at various points during your career and said, hey, have you ever thought about, you know, moving up to, you know, Division II or Division III? Did you ever have any of those opportunities? And his answer was pretty similar to yours in that he said, yeah, I had some opportunities, but I knew that the place where I was happy and it fit my personality and I knew I could continue to have success here. And because of that, even though I looked at the opportunities and I considered them, ultimately I knew that this was where I belonged. And it sounds like that's the same thing for you, that you feel comfortable in that environment. So when you think about a small school environment, what is it that you love about the small school high school environment? What are some of the big positives that you look at when you say, as a coach of a small high school, what is it that is really a positive about that particular situation?
Well, we don't have football, first and foremost. I mean, I get my kids, I can get them, you know, every day of the year if I want them. And, that's one thing that is very positive. And another thing is, when you've had a little success, you know, and like I said earlier, this, you know, it's the only show in town, you know, and, every Tuesday and Friday night, they pack this little gym we have here. And, it's just a, you know, people are very, very passionate about their basketball and they're really proud of our program. And man, we go off to the state tournaments and regional tournaments and everything. And it's amazing how many people are there, you know, supporting us. And I've had some really good friends of mine that have gone from, say, you know, 2A schools and or 3A schools, and they've moved up and coached in the biggest classifications. And some of them had even tried college ball too. And they'll always come back and tell me, man, don't mess with happy. If you're happy and you've got a good thing going there, don't mess with happy. And that's really kind of stuck with me, man. It really has. I've had a lot of people that, you know, we just finished up our state tournament last month. And man, I had so many people that come up to me and have called and texted and said, I just cannot believe y'all's crowd. And it's just amazing how many people that y'all have come support y'all. And that's really cool. I'm kind of jealous, you know, and I've got a really good friend of mine who's, you know, I've been lucky to be my best friend in the whole world, Bill Taylor. And, he came and watched us play and he said the same thing. He just, you know, he'll shake his head and say, dude, don't mess with happy. He said, you're so lucky to be where you are. Just enjoy it. So I've kind of taken that kind of stuff to heart, man. I know guys that have left and gone on, try to go to bigger schools and chase some money a little bit, or, you know, and they'll always, one guy told me, he said, man, I spent the rest of my career trying to get back to what I once had when I was in a small school. So that's kind of been my motto, you know, don't mess with happy.
Yeah, I think that's a great motto. I honestly think that a lot of times, and not just this doesn't just apply to coaching. I think it applies to life in general. That I think I want to say that it was Mike Dunlap, who's the coach now of Loyola Marymount, and he also coached the Charlotte Bobcats at one point. And I heard him speak down at the Jay Billis camp last summer, and then we also had him on the podcast. But I remember him saying during the Jay Billis thing a similar saying to what you said, and that was that there's always a price to pay for leaving happy. And you know, you might have a job that you really love, and yeah, there's an opportunity at a bigger school or a different school or in another state or something that offers you more money. And his point was that there are great coaches at every single level of the game. You can have guys who are tremendous youth basketball coaches. You can have guys who are tremendous coaches at smallest levels of high school. You can have tremendous coaches in college at all levels and up to the professionals. And it really doesn't matter what level you're coaching. What matters is that you're having an impact on your players. And I think that don't mess with happy is a great way to organize your life and your career.
Right.
Because I think, again, if you think about teaching your own kids, what are you trying to get them to do? If you could have one wish for your kids, I think it's that they'd be happy in their life. And so if you've gotten to that point where you're happy with what you're doing, then man, why wouldn't you want to stay? And I think there's something to be said for that. I want to go back to something that you said when you talked about the state tournament and just the number of fans and people commenting about what a great crowd you had. Have you done anything? Is there anything that you can point to other than the fact that you just live in a town that loves basketball? Is there anything that you, as the coach of the varsity program, has done to sort of foster that community involvement and get people behind your team? Do you guys do things in the community? Is there any tips you could give for a coach out there who's trying to maybe engage their community, get more people to come out and support their program? Anything that you've had success with?
Well, not as far as the community goes, it was really kind of like that when I got here. I mean, it was, Kirby really enjoyed to love their basketball. One of the things that this gym is open. It's not now, of course, but I've tried to make it a point for all of my kids, 365 days a year. If they want in the gym, I don't want them to not be able to go. And we'll have a lot of, it's so funny, early October, we'll have people, we'll be running a scrimmage or something at night, and we may have 50 or 60 people there watching. And just, they want to come up and see what kind of team you got, and who's looking good and things like that. And, as far as us doing anything, out of the ordinary, not really. I really don't think so. It's just, they're real passionate about it.
Yeah, that's terrific. I mean, it's exciting to hear, because I think one of the things, and I'm here in Ohio, and one of the things that I've noticed over the years is that just across the board, I would say there's been probably less, I think, community support and support within the student body of a lot of schools. Not every school has had that kind of drop off, but I feel like just across the board, there's been a sense of it's just, people aren't as invested in high school basketball as maybe they were 15 or 20 years ago. And it's great to hear when I get a chance to talk to coaches who do have that same type of community support and the support of the student body. I just think that makes such a difference in terms of the environment that you get to coach in and then the environment that your kids get to play in. There's nothing better than playing in front of a packed house, whether you're playing at home and those people are cheering for you, or sometimes it's even more satisfying to play on the road with a hostile crowd and then keep them quiet by playing really well. And so I'm glad to hear that you're having that kind of community support. It's got to be fun to be in that environment day after day.
Yeah, it really is. And this community here, I mean, everybody kind of bonds together. I was just sitting there thinking as you were talking, I mean, we've had, people that, have circumstances that come up in their life, and we had one of our neighboring schools here a few years ago is this, they had a grandparent that was really instrumental in summer basketball and everything. And this lady had passed away, and her son actually went to a different school, a neighboring school here. And one of my seniors come to me and said, that lady was at every game we played in the summer. She kept the book, endless days. I think it'd be real neat if our whole team just loaded up and went to her funeral visitation. And it, this was come from the kid, and I didn't come up with this. And I said, well, you know, Logan, that's probably a really good idea. So he organized a meeting. He was our team captain. He got all the kids together. He said, we're all going to wear our travel tops. We're all going to go to this funeral visitation because this lady has helped raise us in this community. And we loaded up in about four or five different vehicles, and all 20 of us showed up at this, you know, visitation. And it was a pretty neat deal to see the looks on the people's faces, because these were people that are, they were our rivals, you know. They, during the school year, we play against them and want to beat them and everything. But he had organized this for all of us to get together and go over there, and it was really a neat deal, you know. And I, the family continued to, you know, they thanked me and thanked me. I said, man, I can't take credit for this. This come from my kids. They wanted to do this. And so I think things like that, when you have, you know, good kids, and people know that they're good kids, and they'll help you out. You know, they're not just in it for basketball. They're trying to, you know, good, be good people also.
Yeah, that to me really is what it's all about. If I could boil down coaching to one thing, I think it's really having a positive impact on kids and using the game of basketball, which we love to be able to do that. And I think that story really illustrates, even though you're not directly taking credit for organizing that, I think the fact that you had an influence on that young man that was on your team, and I'm sure his parents obviously had an impact in raising a quality kid who, again, is thinking of others. And really, that's something that I don't think you can put a price tag on that. We all know that ultimately in the coaching profession, to some degree, depending on what your school administration is like and depending on where, what your community is like, we all get judged by our one loss record to some degree. But yet, I think really what's ultimately most important is the things that you just described, is what kind of people are we putting out there into society after our time with those kids is over? And that story speaks volumes about what kind of kid that kid was, and then obviously what your other players who, you know, followed. You got to have a leader, but then you got to have kids who are willing to follow the right leaders, because we know there are times where kids can follow the wrong leaders. And so you as a coach are obviously setting the tone for making that happen. So let me ask you this. When you think about your role as the head varsity coach, and not, obviously not only is your responsibility to coach the varsity team, but you have the responsibility of sort of running the entire K-12 program and figuring out what that's going to look like. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you develop your youth program and what that looks like, and how, what your role is in running the youth program?
We have a really good, you know, peewee program. We have some kids that are, I say they're not kids now, but it's some people are, have played for me through the years, and you know, their kids are coming on now, and they've taken the role of wanting to coach them, you know, at an early age. And then I'm also the junior high basketball coach too. I really enjoy that. I mean, I want to coach the junior high kids, because I want to have them for that 3 years before I get them in, you know, the high school. And but I just kind of, you know, I'll step in on practices and watch them work out and stuff, you know. And it's just really neat to see them when they start, and then once they get to playing games. And of course, I got to see that with my son and daughter both, you know, firsthand, you know, and starting as a second or a third grader, and then just falling in love with the game. And I'll go a lot of times out on the playgrounds, you know, when they've got a 5-on-5 game going out there. I like to just go stand and watch, you know. I don't go as a coach. I just go to watch and support them. And if somebody does something good, I'll go give them a high five and just kind of make it for the younger kids, you know, make it real low key, you know. But don't go out there and act like that, you know, hey, you missed that shot. Give me 10 push-ups, you know. Just try to make it fun for them, and hopefully they, you know, continue to fall in love with it. And we do an elementary camp here every year, and we have so many kids. I mean, it's awesome to see it. And we've even, you know, we've got a lot of kids from our area schools, you know, around us that will bring their young ones up here. I think we may be the only school around here right now that's doing an elementary camp. And we don't do the trophies for everything. We don't do the contest. It is strictly fundamental basketball, and it's passing, it's, you know, dribbling, it's, but it, we're, you know, we're trying to make it fun for them. But we're going to try to, that's what I tell them all the time. You know, we got you for 3 days. We're not going to be your babysitter. We're going to try to teach you how to play a little bit. And, then it's pretty neat when I get them in seventh grade, you know, seeing these kids that I've watched, you know, since the first grade, and then all of a sudden they're sitting in front of me and I'm talking to them about, you know, what I expect from them. And, it's pretty cool. You know, I've had parents come up to me and say, man, my son has wanted to play for you for 3 or 4 years now. And I can't lie. It's pretty cool that my son's finally getting to play for you. You know, it's pretty neat. They may not feel that after the first
month.
That's
awesome. That was one. Yeah, right. I understand. That was going to be my next question I was going to ask you, which is, and I think you answered it, but we can kind of go into a little bit more depth. To me, I think what's very, very important in a high school program is the setting up of a situation where kids from the time they're very, very young want to be a part of that high school program, that they aspire eventually to work at their game, to continue to get better so that they can play and put on the jersey and go out and play on Friday night for Coach Smith. To me, I think that the setting up that scenario to me is super valuable. And so I think by you, A, having the camp, and then B, by being the junior high coach and getting those kids and having them see you all the time, those kids, as that parent said, they're excited. They know you. They know that they're going to eventually get an opportunity to play for you since you've been there for such a long time. And so as a result of that, I'm sure that inspires many more kids, A, to just get involved, and then B, those kids who are involved to probably work just that much harder because they know what's coming up ahead of them. To me, that's invaluable as a high school coach to set that up. Do you agree with that?
I do. I totally do. We have an end zone here in our gym. It's kind of, you know, student section, and it's so funny. You know, when I start back to the locker room to talk to my players, like at the end of the third quarter of the girls' game, and I've been doing it this way for, you know, 27 years, I always walk along the baseline, go to our locker room, and the kids will get over on they'll get on that rail when you start walking by, and they all want a high five, you know, and you'll watch them during the game, and they'll just be leaning over that rail watching those kids, you know, and I can remember my son doing it. You know, my son would be in the living room with a Nerf goal, and it was so funny. He could, as a second, third grader, he could mimic the shot of every one of my players because he had watched them and studied them so much. And it was so funny. He'd say, "Dad, who's this?" And I'd say, "Oh, that's Lucas. Yeah, he's left-handed jump hook."
That's awesome.
Say, "Who's this awesome here?" And it was just so neat, you know, but he was one of those kids, you know, that was always standing on that rail. They all want a high five and they get behind it, you know?
Absolutely. Do your players get involved in the camp? And so are the kids not only seeing you, but are they also seeing your varsity players get involved with them?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll have as many that want to help. Of course, some of them have jobs and everything that can't make it, but I'll usually, you know, I've usually got four or five of them out there. And I've gotten old enough now to where I don't try to demonstrate a whole lot of dribbling and stuff like that. I might embarrass myself, but I always have, and I make a point, you know, every year when I introduce them, you know, this guy's a 3-year starter for us. He's been all state twice, and you know, he averaged so many points a game, and it's so neat to see the look on those kids' faces. You know, it's like they're looking at LeBron, you know, but it's really not.
Right. Absolutely. That's the way it should be, though. I mean, that honestly, like, that's the way I think. If you're a high school coach and you want to have long-term success in a program, to me, building that connection between the young kids in your community and your varsity players and you yourself as the coach, like, those kids got to know you. They got to know your players. They got to be at your games.
Yeah,
so that there's right. that aspiration piece of someday I want to put on those colors and I want to run out of the tunnel with the fight song playing and I want to be out on that floor. And too often I think that nowadays that is lost, because we all know, and we can kind of speak to this too, maybe a little bit, is the amount of time that is required of a high school coach today, I think, is more than it's probably ever been in terms of what the baseline is, as far as the amount of time that's required from off-season workouts to strength and conditioning to watching film to scouting to all the different things that we all know that coaches do. But I think they do it more now than they ever have. And so I think it's really, really important for a coach to be able to put that time in, despite the fact that, again, it's just one more thing on your plate. But to me, it's a very, very important thing if you're going to run a complete program.
Right. I agree with you.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the J. Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the J. Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the J. Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
Let me ask you this. When you think about those kids coming up, and how do you balance, this is what I wanted to ask you from before, how do you balance your time with not only coaching the varsity, but also coaching the junior high? How does that work in terms of time management for you?
Well, we practice the junior high kids second period, which starts about 9:05, somewhere in there. And our school actually goes, we have a 4-day work week. We don't go on Friday. And so we actually don't let out of school till 4:10 every day. So what we'll do is we'll practice from 9 to 10:05, 10:10, and then a few days a week we'll bring them back. And then my senior high goes, we start our practice at 3:05, and then we go till however long we, you know, need. Usually I've kind of changed through the years. I used to be 2.5 hours every day. That's the way it's going to be. Now we've shortened it back to, you know, an hour and a half, an hour and 45. That's a long practice for us. And then that gives me time also to bring back the junior high if I want to do that at the end, after I get done with them.
So I'm just
– go ahead.
Yeah, understood. I'm curious about the – just your change in philosophy in terms of the length of time for practice, because this is something that is sort of near and dear to my heart as a college player. I always felt like during our season, there were times when I was playing where I was like, why are we practicing for 2 hours, 2.5 hours the day before a game or 2 days before a game and just, you know, beating ourselves into the ground? And then when I first started coaching, I coached 13 years at the high school level, but the first, I think, 11, we had the exact same staff. So I was the assistant varsity coach, and we had a head coach, and then we had a JV coach. And we were all relatively young at the time. And none of us, our head coach was married, but the other two of us were single. And we used to have these like 3-3.5 hour practices. And then after that, we'd kind of sit in the coach's office and talk. And, you know, you just think about it. It seemed like we had endless time way back then before I had kids and a wife and, you know, a family at home.
Right.
And I think back on that time now and I'm like, what possibly could we have been accomplishing in that third hour, that last 30 minutes of a 3 hour and 30 minute practice? Like, it could have been, it had to be next to nothing. So I'm just curious, that what point did you start to come to maybe an understanding, or just start to shift your philosophy away from those super long practices to shorten them up? What made you change that, the practice times?
Well, we, I think it was 1998 and 99. We had gone 33-2 and 33-3. And got beat in the regional tournament both years. And we were one of the top teams in the state. And, I mean, I really think I burn them out. I mean, I look back on it now and I think, man, we get them the first day of school, you know, because we don't have football. We start practicing in August, and then we play, you know, we play 40 games a year. And by the end of the year, they were wore out. They were exhausted. And I was talking to an older coach, and he told me, he said, you know, he said, you want those kids, when they leave practice every day, they're still hungry. They want some more. And he said, that way, they'll, when it gets, you know, time at the end of the year, they'll start to peak. He said, you may be peaking too soon. And I thought, well, you know, I don't know about that. Well, I had twins in August of 1999, and my wife was in graduate school, and she would have to go to Little Rock 3 days a week, which is, you know, 1 hour and 45 minutes from here. So there wasn't anybody to keep the kids. So at 3:30, 4 o'clock every day, I'd have to be at home because my mother-in-law would have to leave. And so I'd have to go keep two infants, you know. Well, that year we didn't have near the talent that we had had the year before, 2 years before. And I mean, we weren't even close to, I didn't think, as talented or as good. We end up in the state semifinals and got beat in overtime to keep from going to the championship. And I really look back on it now and I think, man, I really think it was because I would go in and I'd my wife would be talking to me all day. Look, you got to make sure you're at home. You got to be there by 3:45, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'll be there. I'll be there. So I'll go into my practice and I'd say, this is back when we would, you know, we didn't start at 3:05. We'd start like 2:15 or something like that. And I'd go in there and say, look, guys, I need to be out of here in 1 hour and 10 minutes. Can I get 1 hour and 10 minutes of everything you got, and then we're out of here? And it was like, yeah, heck yeah, we're going to be out of here by 3:45, absolutely. And I mean, it looked like, I mean, they were out there and they were just all over the place. And then I'd say, all right, great job, stack it up, let's go. And it just seemed like we continued to get better all year long. And we end up in the state tournament that year and played our best basketball in the tournament. So I thought, man, you know, you dummy, if you'd have done this the last 2 years, you might have won a championship. But we kind of figured it out, and that's what I'll tell my players now. I said, I'm gonna get it out of you one way or the other. We can do it with a ball or without. But, you know, you're going to give me everything you got. We may not be in here but 1.5 hours, but I want everything you got in 1.5 hours. And it seemed to work. It seemed like, you know, we continue to improve, you know, all year long. You know, when you play that many games in a season, there's going to be, you know, ups and downs, peaks and valleys, and you're going to beat a good team and then somebody's going to beat you. And it's, we just try to, you know, rebound from it and come back to practice and work on the things that we need to work on and then get them out of there as quick as we can. And I really think that I've had more kids during that time that want to stay after. And I'll say, hey, you want to stay after and shoot? Go ahead, man. Nobody in the gym. You go ahead. And we'll have kids that may stay up there an extra hour just working on their craft.
One, it's interesting that sometimes those accidental discoveries end up being the most valuable.
Right.
And who knows? Who knows at what point you may have come to that on your own. It just took an extenuating circumstance to kind of drive the point home. And then I think you're 100% right when you think about having a shorter, more intense practice. And then that does, in a lot of cases, encourage kids to stick around and work a little bit on their game, maybe on some things that, you know, are important to them or things that they know they got to work on, things that you may not have time to do within the confines of your own individual practice.
Right.
Because we know, as important as skill development is, there's still a lot of team stuff that you have to get in order to be able to have success out on the court. And so if kids can be putting in some extra time after the practice in order to be able to do that, to me, that seems like the best, you know, that's the best of both worlds.
Right.
All right. When we think about you from the beginning of your coaching career to where you are now, what are one or two things that you feel like you've improved at as a coach from when you first started? If you can narrow that down to a couple things, maybe that you started out, you're like, if I look back on the way I used to do those things, maybe I wasn't so good at that then, and now I feel like I've really gotten a handle on that.
Well, time management being one for sure, you know, managing practice. But another thing is it really changed when I started having kids and having kids at my house that you hear them talk, you know, and my son was, you know, he would just tell me, man, Dad, we need some rest. We need a break. And I think I've gotten better, you know, instead of saying, you know, okay, we're going to run forever. I think I've gotten a lot better at just kind of feeling, you know, not being the coach that says it's my way or the highway. A lot of times I'll get, you know, my seniors together at the end of practice and I'll say, in your opinion, what do we need to do right now? What do we need to work on from, you know, the next 10 minutes? And you throw it back in their lap and your seniors kind of, you know, your captains will say, I think we need to work on our free throw shooting. And then I'll have one, my son was always one, I think we need to work on our end of game stuff, you know, 30 seconds left on the clock situations. And before, when I was a young coach, I wouldn't really care what they thought we needed to do. It's my way or the highway. And I think, you know, I started listening more to my kids, I think. I just kind of had a little bit more compassion for them, maybe.
I think having your own kids definitely changes you in that way, for sure. Because I think when you're single or you're married and you don't have kids, I think it's very easy to just kind of get caught up in me and what I want to do and what I believe. And then, of course, just I think in general, if you look at the way the coaching profession has changed over the last 30 years, you go back 30 years ago and there was many more my way or the highway coaches. And I think that people who are of a similar age bracket as you and I, a lot of the coaches that we played for, that was what we saw on TV. That was how we were coached in many cases. And so I tell people all the time that I think about when I got my first coaching job, and I was a pretty bad coach because, one, I thought I knew a lot because I was a Division I player and, you know, nobody really was going to be able to tell me much of anything. So I thought I knew a whole lot. And so there was that piece of it. And then the second piece of it was that when I think about what I did in terms of the actual drills and strategies and whatever, like basically it was either my high school coach or my college coach. So really I only took from two guys. I didn't go out and try to learn from anybody else. I just took and did what I knew. And, you know, you think about that now and just the wealth of resources that are out there as a coach if you want to improve and get better. And generally speaking, the coaching profession has shifted away from that my way or the highway into more of what you describe, which is the communication and the relationship building and trying to get the most out of kids in a positive, loving way as opposed to, hey, you're going to do this or else type of situation.
Right.
So when you think about your evolution as a coach, what are some things or what are some go-to resources, whether it's mentors that you talk to or just things that you do to improve your craft over the course of your career? If you want to go out and you want to learn something, what's your go-to resource for that? Is it books? Is it clinics? Is it mentors? Where do you like to go to improve yourself as a coach?
Well, I've been very fortunate in my whole coaching career to be surrounded by a lot of really, really good coaches. And that's always been my thing. And I tell young coaches this all the time, man, do not be afraid to ask for help. I mean, that's so many young coaches. They've already got it figured out and I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And I've always been right the opposite. I always wanted to reach out and to other coaches. I mean, I've got some retired coaching friends and when I call them in February, they know what I'm doing when I call them. You know, I want to know, you know, how they did this or how they, you know, attacked this. And I've even gone as far as had some of them come to my practices and just watch practice and just from an outsider's view, tell me what you think we need to work on. Okay. What do you think we need to do? Are we doing this correct? And this past year, I had one of my buddies come down. He drove 3.5 hours to work with us on some matchup zone defense. A couple of years ago, I had a friend of mine that has retired and lives in Hot Springs. I had him come over like the week before we started postseason just to talk to him and just tell him, you know, what they can do, kind of give him a motivational speech, you know, and just kind of, you know, build them up a little bit and that. And plus, I do like to go to clinics, enjoy that. But you know, some of the best clinics are sitting around a hotel when you're at a clinic and visiting with some of your coaching buddies.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I mean, I've gotten so much from guys, and I can remember being at Tunica, Mississippi for the Nike clinic one year, and we were all fired up. Everybody was going to go see John Calipari play or talk and all this, and I got more from our hotel room that night than I did at the actual clinic, because a lot of the times when a college coach is talking to you, he's talking about getting it into a 6'11 post guy. We don't have any of those. So, you know, it's just kind of, I've got some, you know, some go-to guys that, that I'll call on, and they know I'm not afraid to help. And I think they're the same way. I mean, anytime I can help somebody, I certainly want to be there for them to reach out to.
I think that's one of the other things too that we found from doing the podcast is just how willing coaches are out there to share what they know and share what they do. And we all know that to some degree, we're all just borrowing or stealing from other people anyway. There's very few of us who are reinventing the wheel and coming up with something completely unique. Just about anything that is new in the game has probably been around in some form or fashion somewhere. And so I think that the internet era and just the fact that we can now, A, it's so easy to share, and B, I think even if you wanted to keep things secret and under wraps, it's almost impossible now with the amount of film that's out there and just the easy connectivity that everybody has. There's no way to keep anything secret. And so I think that's been honestly a great thing for the coaching profession, is just how much it's opened up and how much people are willing to share. And that could be people like you described who are your good friends, or they're retired coaches, or they're people who live across the state that you can call up and talk to or have show up at your practice. And then you think about, I know you had an opportunity, I saw you tweeting about it, the virtual coaches clinic.
Yeah.
Just all those guys that are on there sharing. I mean, that thing was incredible. The
it's
amount
awesome.
Of quality
yeah,
of people
is.
that they had there. It was just amazing. And here you have all these guys again who are super accomplished in the game and at their various levels, and they're all willing to share. To me, that's completely invaluable. And then I just wanted to follow up with what you said about bringing somebody in to watch your practice. Do you find that when you bring somebody in to watch, that they sometimes catch something that in their mind, when they talk to you, they're like, God, it's so obvious that you guys need to do this. And you're like,
yeah,
oh, I never really noticed that. That to me, I think would be the biggest insight. Do you find that to be the case?
Absolutely. Yeah. No question about it. I mean, they'll sit there and they'll watch for a little bit, and it's like, does he always do this? And I was like, always do what? And I had a college coach in here one time that was recruiting one of my players, and he walked in the front door, and he comes in, introduces himself to me, and he said, that's him right there, isn't it? I said, yeah, big left-hander. And I said, yeah, that's him. He said, can I tell him something real quick? I said, sure. Yeah, go ahead, coach. And he stepped out on the court. He introduced himself, and he said, hey, you're taking that ball. You know, it's too much wasted motion. Shorten that stroke up a little bit. You know, you're taking it from down low, and, you know, get it right here and just shorten it up. And I've been sitting here watching this kid all year long, and he's a heck of a good player. And man, he started wearing it out. And I was like, well, that makes me feel real good. And he started laughing. He said, man, he said, I just come in off the street. He said, you see it every day. You've gotten used to it. He said, you could do the same thing at my college practice if you wanted to. You could walk in and you'd see something that I'd need to change. He said, you know, that's just part of it. But, yeah, it made me feel real, real great to hear. He just walks in, introduces himself, and corrects one of my players right off the bat. Made him better, so I was good with it.
That's hilarious. There you go. That is very funny. I think that there's definitely truth in that. And I think not only in that form or fashion, but I think one of the things, especially if you're an inexperienced coach, and I've talked about this, my first job as coming out of college, I was a JV head coach. And I remember my first day of practice and coming in thinking I knew everything and that I was going to be this great coach. And the first 5 minutes of us going and doing some 5-on-5 at some point during the practice, I just remember being completely and utterly overwhelmed by all the things I saw that I wanted to correct in that first 5 minutes. I'm like, there's like 500 things going wrong here, and I want to try to fix every single one of them. And I think that's one of the things that I learned pretty quickly over the course of my coaching career, was that you can't fix 500 things at once. You better zero in on the one or two things that are most important to you in the moment and fix them one at a time instead of trying to focus on 500 things, because then you never get anything accomplished.
Yes. I've had that overwhelming feeling a bunch. I'll walk out sometimes and I'm like, man, I don't even know where to start. And it's so funny, you know, you get frustrated and then the next day you come out there, well, hey, we've corrected that. So, hey, yeah, well, you know, it doesn't take much, you know, little small victories and you're right back at it, ready to go.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, that those small victories that you get as a coach, I think are really important to keep you coming back and building those relationships with kids. And that's really what ends up giving you the most satisfaction. You know, you think about your one loss record, and obviously that's what keeps you in your job long term to some degree. But really, it's those small moments with kids and, you know, the things that we talked about earlier in terms of just developing kids with character and building those relationships. And that ends up being something that is really, really important over the course of your coaching career. The other thing that's really important is, especially in today's game, is the relationship between a coach and parents. So I wanted to ask you a little bit about how you involve the parents of your players in your program. How do you go about reaching out to them and making sure that you have them on the same page with you so that everybody's pulling in the same direction and you don't have issues with parents? How do you get out in front of those issues and those potential problems with parents to make sure that you have everybody on the same page?
Well, I haven't had many parent problems as far as, of course, you know, the biggest one you always have is playing time. And, you know, when I talk to parents, you know, all the time, it's always, you know, when is my kid going to get to play more? You know, why? And I have found that, you know, when you're brutally honest from the get-go, it really makes it a lot easier. And, you know, I tell kids all the time, when we're at the gym, and it's always the kids that are wanting the playing time that they're not willing to put the work in. And I'll tell them, man, here's the deal. You know, right now we're going to play, you know, 9 kids. You're number 11. And here's the reason for that. And a lot of times the kid, you know, if they go home and the parent says something to them, the kid will say, hey, coach, explain this to me. And I've got to be able to do this more. So it's really been pretty, I don't know. I really hadn't had any, you know, parent problems as far as that go in the last few years, because I think everybody, they know and I try to tell them. I don't try to, you know, sugarcoat it. And I don't try to say, hey, I'm going to play you tonight. You know, I'll just tell them, you've got to get, I had a kid this past year. I told him, I said, man, here's what you have to do to help our team. Okay. We've got kids that can fill it up. We've got kids that can score. When you come in, you've got to bring us something off the bench. You've got to defend and you've got to rebound. Okay. That's really basically all you got to do. And if I'm the open guy, I'm not expecting you to do a lot of scoring. Now, if you want to play in the game, you've got to be able to do those things. You can't go stand out there. You're going to have to compete. And this kid was 5'9", okay, 5'8", 5'9". And, you know, he ended up playing a lot because he understood his role. He understood what I expected him to do. And he ended up playing more than another kid. And the kid asked me, coach, what do I got to do to play more? I said, well, you know, I've told you the same as I did Luke. All right, you've got to be able to defend and rebound. You refuse to do either one of them, okay? So, therefore, he plays and you don't. I mean, that's as plain as I can put it. I mean, I said, I love every one of you kids. I love you to death. I'd do anything in the world for you. But your playing times, it's going to be earned. You're not going to be giving it to you because I love you, because I love all of you. And if you prove to me that you can go out there and not turn it over and be a team guy and defend and rebound, you're going to get your minutes. And I had one kid, as the parent told me, said, you know, I wanted to come up there and talk to you, and I wanted to, you know, find out about it. He said, but he told me, he said, Dad, there's no need of you going up there and talking to him. He's already told me why I'm not playing, because I don't defend and I don't rebound. He said, okay. Well, the dad was laughing about it. You know, he come back and said, well, I figured that out. I didn't have to come talk to you. So it was pretty neat, you know, that he told him that. But, I mean, it's just, you know, I tell, you know, parents are, it's funny how they'll, and, you know, they may just stop by sometime in casual conversation and just kind of drop a hint to you, you know, and they'll say, yeah, man, my son's kind of getting, you know, it's, he don't have much confidence right now. I'm thinking, well, I don't have much confidence in him either because I'm not playing him. I don't have any confidence in him going to defend and rebound. But, you know, they're real subtle about it. They don't just come up there and mad and all that. They want to just kind of drop it in there to you real easy. And I end up telling them, look, man, here's the deal. Love your kid. Think a lot of you. But, man, when it comes down to playing time, he's going to have to earn it. So we go from there.
Absolutely. Do you think that you've gotten better at those, I don't want to say difficult conversations, but just that in terms of talking to kids, talking to parents, of being able to tell the brutal, honest truth to kids and parents, do you think that's something that you've gotten better at, or do you think that was something that you were pretty good with right from the beginning of your coaching career, that you understood that that was going to be necessary if you were going to head off potential issues moving forward?
I think I've always had a pretty good handle on it because I've always had a good relationship with the kids. And in a small town like this, I mean, you know everybody, you know them personally. And, you know, I've had some difficult conversations with, you know, really close people. And I'll tell them, I said, you know, I don't want this to be weird. I mean, if you want to ask me a question, I'm going to answer it. I don't want it to affect anything. And I think one of the things that I've gotten a lot better at is I don't hold a grudge against the kid or the parent. You know, I tell them how it is. And as long as they're talking to me and we're being civil and they're understanding what I'm saying, I think, you know, I've had more conversations that when they leave, it ends more positive than it did when it started. You know, I had one this year, and it wasn't anything about playing time. It was just, I could tell that the guy was mad. He was upset, and it wasn't at me, but it was just at other things. And I come in and let him talk a little bit. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. I said, I don't know if somebody made your kid feel like he wasn't good or playing well or didn't give it all. But I can tell you right now, your son was an absolute warrior tonight, and he's the only reason that we were in the game. So I said, I really don't know who said anything. Obviously, I didn't. I said, so I just want to tell you, you should be real proud of your kid and go home and hug his neck because he did everything he could tonight. And after talking to him, he gave me a hug. He walked out. He said, man, I'm proud I stopped by and talked to you. He wasn't mad at me, but he was mad when he got here. But anyway, we had a good conversation, right. and he left, and everything was good.
I think that's something that I know that, speaking for myself, that's one of the things that I think I almost learned that more as a teacher than as a coach, and that you get parents a lot of times, what I find both in coaching and in teaching is that when you have somebody who's upset with you for whatever reason, a lot of times when they call you up or they come and meet with you, a lot of times they're upset because they just don't have all the information, or they don't have the facts, or they think that something was said or that something is going on that really isn't going on. And what I've found to be successful, and it sounds like you have sort of the same philosophy, is if you speak to someone calmly, and you listen to their concerns, and then you explain the truth to them, more often than not, you're going to end up getting a positive result out of that conversation. I think there's a lesson there to be learned for any coach, and especially for young coaches or young teachers that are out there. Because a lot of times, I think the natural reaction is when someone comes at you is to be defensive and go back at them. And then we all know that that turns into a situation where nobody leaves happy, and it's not a positive ending, unlike what you described, where, again, you're able to talk sense into the person and tell them the truth and make sure that you're on the same page. And usually when you do that, then you end up with that positive reaction.
Yeah, I ask parents, I said, do you trust me? And they'll say, absolutely trust you. I've always, you know, all right, do you believe I'm going to do what's best for our team? Not for you individually. Do you think I'm going to do what's best for our team? Yeah, I know you will. I said, then you'd have to believe that I know what I'm doing and I'm playing the right guys. And here it is. I mean, I've given you the blueprint. You know, if you'll do these things, you're going to help our team. But, you know, so many times, you know, that a lot of kids have, you know, let's face it, the only work that they've ever done has been, you know, in basketball. They've been handed, you know, brand new trucks or, you know, brand new phone, and never really had to work a whole lot for anything. And then all of a sudden they get in sports and, man, I'm going to have to work, you know. And it's so funny how some of them just, you know, they don't, they're not willing to put forth that effort because they, you know, I'm all about, you know, preparing the child for the road, not preparing the road for the child, you know. Did I say that right? Anyway, yep. You know,
you said it right.
Having kids that, you know, don't pave the way for them, man. Make them get out there and work for it. And you know, they come out on the other side and they're so thankful that they had to work for it and they didn't have it give to them.
Absolutely. I think in our society today, I think there's, especially with kids, I think there's just a disconnect between effort and then results or the things that you get. And too often, as you said, kids get things handed to them without the work being put behind it. And then when we do ask them to work for something, it makes it tough on them because they just don't have a lot of experience. And that's where I think sports plays such a vital role in the development of young people, is it's sort of a microcosm of what life is like. You know, too often now in society, everybody gets a trophy mentality.
Right.
And I think in competitive sports, we have to understand that what you put into it, the work that you put in, equals what you get out of it. And you're going to get rewarded if you put in a tremendous amount of effort. And if you don't put effort into it, you're not going to get anything out. And I think that life is certainly that same way. And I think team sports does really a fantastic job of being able to teach those kinds of lessons to our young people. And to me, that's, again, something that good coaches do all the time.
Coaches, we've teamed up with Coach Tyler Whitcomb so you can now purchase his exclusive new playbooks right from the Hoopheads Pod website. If you're looking for ways to improve your team next season, these playbooks blend affordability with the quality content that serious coaches are looking for. Just visit hoopheadspod.com/store and you'll find playbooks from John Calipari of Kentucky, Leonard Hamilton from Florida State, and Mike Young of Virginia Tech. Check out these great resources at hoopheadspod.com/store.
How, when you're having these conversations, so clearly you're communicating to your players what your expectation is for them if they're going to get out on the floor. So how do you go about communicating a player's role to them? Is that done on the practice floor just through the course of discussion? Is it a formal meeting at some point during the season after a practice? Just talk a little bit about how you communicate to players what's expected of them kind of day in, day out heading into the season.
Well, a lot of times, like during practice, when, you know, we're shooting free throws or maybe we're stretching at the beginning or something like that, I'll have one of them, you know, or just kind of a lot of times before practice when they're just out there shooting, you know, everybody's getting dressed, waiting to get out there. And I'll just kind of go up there and put my arm around one of them and walk him down the sideline with me and say, you know, this is what I've got to have you to do. A lot of times it happens like at team camp. You know, we go to camps. Usually we try to go to three or four in the summer, and I'll tell them, like, when I take them out. I can remember vividly one kid this past year. I took him out. We were at Fayetteville at the camp up there. And when I took him out, he hadn't been in probably a minute and a half. And he comes running off the court. And I just stopped him, you know, away from the bench and everything. I put my arm around him and said, look, you know, you're not a starter on this team. You know that. You see that. This is what you're going to have to do. I'm going to have to see this before you get very much playing time. And I said, I'm going to tell you, it's going to be one of those things that when the season gets here and you still haven't corrected this, you're going to be wondering why you're not getting to play. And, you know, this is why. And I had a kid, a different kid last year. We were actually on the bus getting ready to come home. And you could tell, you know, we'd played really well at the camp, but he was kind of down. He didn't get to play much. And we stopped at a restaurant to go in to eat, and he was kind of lagging behind. And of course, I don't like to have this conversation, you know, with with the bigger kids. You know, I didn't want to say, look, dude, you need to lose weight. You're out of shape. you know, he's a big boy. I mean, he was just not in good shape. He hadn't been weight workouts. He hadn't been spending any time in the gym. And it was just one of those things where he kind of let it be on the back burner. And he just kind of thought he was going to get to play. And I told him, I said, Tanner, man, I love you. You know I do. I said, but you have going to have to get in shape if you're going to help this team. We're going to get up and down. And I said, there's no question you can help us, but you're going to have to get in shape. And yes, sir. I said, I just want you to know that. And it was so funny. His dad calls me later. And I mean, like a week or two later. And he said, well, I've done told my kid he's too fat to play. I said, he said, he's going to have to lose some weight before he gets out there. He knows it. You've told him, I've told him, everybody's told him. If he don't want to do it, he can just sit his butt on the bench all year. And of course I coached his dad several years ago. And he said, he knows, he said, he's going to have to do it if he's going to play. So
that was one step up in brutal honesty.
Yeah, that's right. It sure was. And, but you know, I a lot of times I'll have a formal meeting. I'll get them like as they come out of the locker room. You know, my office is right there, and I'll say, hey, step in here. I need to talk to you for a second. And we just, you know, just lay it all out there, and I'll tell them, you know, what are you thinking? And you know, it's amazing when you ask them what they think about a situation, how often, you know, they really agree with you. They don't like the situation, but they agree with what you're doing.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things too that sometimes I think gets lost. And I think that when I think about meetings that I've had with parents over the course of my coaching career, and you're talking about playing time or you're talking about a situation on a team, and so often when you have those conversations and you have the parent and you have the kid in the room, I think more often than not, deep down, the kid knows why they're not playing.
Right.
The kid knows why the person next to them is playing ahead of them. It's very, very rare that now the kid might have bravado. The kid might be walking around school telling kids that he should be playing ahead of somebody else. But you put him in a room with his parents and with a coaching staff, and it comes right down to it. I'd say in 95% of the cases, the kid knows the reason why he's not playing. And oftentimes it's the parent who just doesn't understand or hasn't heard the whole story from the kid. And it's important that in that case to make sure that the parent hears the truth about the situation too. And I think if you do that, again, it's like we've said for the last 15 or 20 minutes, having the ability to be honest and tell the truth, regardless of the situation, ends up heading off a lot of problems where if you're kind of wishy-washy from the beginning, that's when you get yourself in trouble as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. No question.
All right. Talk to me a little bit about your methodology for putting together a practice plan, because I know that's something that coaches out there are often interested in hearing about, is just what's your – how do you go about designing a practice, putting it together, and then what do you want to have be a part of – every single one of your practices? Is there a certain amount of time you want to spend on, we want to make sure we do this every single day? Or just explain to me what your process looks like.
Well, we start, you know, every day we'll do, we want to get up and down, you know, we'll do some 11-man break, 4-man break, a lot of things like that. And we've got a drill that we started doing it this past year, and I got it from Fred Hoiberg. I think he calls it the speed drill or something like that. Anyway, it's really good. It's timed, and you know they make 40 free throws the first time, or not free throw, I'm sorry, layups the first time. Then they're always trying to beat that, and you know it gets pretty intense. We started doing it. We quit doing it every day because. Well, we had some kids on there that couldn't catch the ball, and the some of the other players were getting mad at them, you know, because they were messing the drill up because they were trying to beat their record. But we'll do that, you know, about the first 30 minutes of our practice is up and down, you know, drills like that. We'll spend Like I said, we get them in August, so we spend a lot of time on individual stuff, you know, dribbling, passing, doing a lot of the cone stuff. I got a really good friend that's a basketball trainer, and I've gotten so much good stuff from him. His name's John Parker. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or not, but he's in our area now, and he's a former college coach, and he's really helped me and our girls coach out a lot. About, we'll go watch his, you know, work out the kids, and I'll tell him, man, I'm stealing that. I'm taking that home with me. But he does a lot of stuff, you know, just ball handling. And then we'll spend the probably next 15, 20 minutes working on defense, and we'll go through our shell stuff and man-to-man. And we run a lot of 1-3-1 defense. We'll go through our some progressions on that, how we're going to cover things. And then we'll spend about the next 20 – this is early I'm talking about, you know, early in the year. We'll spend about the next 20, 30 minutes just going up and down and running our fast break, and not necessarily so much worried about running our offense, just letting them play. Just, you know, get them up and down and let them, you know, instead of being robots, I want them to be ball players, you know. And we'll do that, and then we'll do our, you know, shooting at the end. A lot of times we do a 2-minute shooting drill, then a 3-minute shooting drill, and of course it's, you know, it's timed, and we keep up with their score and how they did, you know, from day to day. And so then we'll do a little conditioning at the end.
So when you chart, do you chart the shooting? Are the kids aware of what their shooting percentages are, what their shooting stats are within a practice? Like, do you utilize that with them in terms of talking about who gets to shoot on the team or who gets more shots? Is that something that you use the statistics for, or are you just more keeping it for your own, you know, just for your own, to see if it matches up with your eye test?
Yeah, that's just seeing if it matches up with our eye test. And it's it's funny, after you do those shooting drills and you got a guy that's, you know, in a 3-minute shooting drill, he may be making, you know, 27 threes or something like that. And then you got one on the other end. How many did you make? I made 11. And then you'll hear them after a couple of days, they'll say, "Coach, I'm no 3-point shooter anyway." I was like, "Well, I'm proud you figured that out. I already knew that, but now you know."
Exactly. That's funny. Sometimes statistics don't lie, right?
You match them up,
and you can, you know, you can figure out real fast where you stand in that particular hierarchy.
We had a drill this year where I had 16 kids on my team, and I put them in our on the bench over there, all 16 of them. I said, "Everybody go sit down in those 16 chairs on the bench." And, you know, of course, there was no, you know, order or anything. And I took number one, and I put him against number 16. And we went to each end of the court, and we shot for 2 minutes. Whoever made the most threes, he advances. And then we went number 2 versus 15. And we did it all the way down, and we didn't seat them or anything. It was just wherever you were sitting. And it ended up, we had two of our best 3 shooters were, you know, going against each other in the first round because of where they sit. But it ended up, you know, when we got done, our best 2 shooters were in the finals, and everybody pulling for them. And it was a lot of fun because everybody was rooting for them. And it just kind of, I don't know, it just, you know, the whole team kind of rallied around it. And he's like, you know, hey, there's a reason why those 2 guys right there get most of the shots, because they can flat shoot it. So, but it would, you know, I didn't go, "All right, number one, you're going against the 16th best player on the team. We're not doing that. We're going to do wherever
right,
you sit.
Right, right.
That's who you're going against." So, but it worked out good, and the kids really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's fun. I think it's fun to mix it up and do some different things like that. And just, especially when it's unexpected, you don't do it all the time. I think that the kids really enjoy getting a chance to root for and, you know, mockingly against, you know, their teammates at times. And to me, I think that's something that, you know, if you're running a practice, it's important to remember as a coach. And I think, you know, it goes back to what we talked about earlier a little bit with the my way or the highway. I think coaches now are probably a lot more willing to do some of those things like what you just described that are, quote, more fun, maybe than you would have seen in the past. And I think when you do that, you break up sort of the level of, you know, just, again, we all know that we want our practices to be serious. We want the kids to have, there's a difference between being fun and being funny, you know, two totally different things. And we want our practices to be fun. And I think sometimes when you throw in a little competition like what you just described, that makes all the difference in then being able to come back and wrap up, you know, ramp up the intensity again, where you can get your team back playing and competing at a high level. And to me, that's something that I think it's important to do. I think you can throw something like that in, you know, every day into practice in a random moment where mm-hmm. you can just kind of keep it light, and then you get back and, you know, allows you to refocus them and get them back to where you want them to be in terms of really getting after it and competing and making each other better.
When we have them as much as we, you know, like when we start in August and then you get them all the way to March, that as far as practice goes, man, I think being able to break up the monotony and, you know, just doing something fun, it makes a difference. You know, it kind of, I know they get tired of hearing my voice all the time. And so that's what I was going to say. Just kind of go out there and do something that you don't normally do. And it, you know, just kind of may pick up the intensity.
Absolutely. If you look back at the totality of your time at Kirby and you had to pin your success on one or two things, and you had to look back and say, what are you most proud of in terms of what you've built there? What would be the things that you'd say, boy, we hung our hat over the course of my coaching career, this is where we've really found our success, both on the floor and with the type of kid that we're able to produce in terms of being good citizens, being the type of kids that we can be proud of?
I think, the expectation of, you know, how hard they work. You know, I hear, you know, a lot of coaches have told me, you know, we can't get our kids to work as hard as your kids do. And that's one of those things that, you know, I've really, it's one of the greatest compliments as a coach you could ever have, in my opinion. And, I had a good friend of mine told me the other day, he said, you know, we all want our kids to play hard. You always get them to play hard. And that's why, you know, y'all have been successful, is how hard the kids play. I don't take, you know, all the credit for that, because they come, you know, from, you know, working class families, and there's a lot of tradition, and they all want to, you know, play here and all that. But I think, you know, one of the things that we've kind of tried to do is, you know, I love these kids, and they know I love them, and I would take a bullet for them, and they know that. And I think they'll play harder for you when they know how you feel about your, you know, each of them. And I think you can coach them hard. You know, you can, if they know when it's over, you're going to hug their neck. And, you know, I'll tell them I said, man, I'm going to be there for you. You know, it don't matter good times or bad times, I'm going to be there for you. And I think that they, you know, they want to play for you when they know that you love them like that. Does that make any sense at all?
How do you it makes a ton of sense. I think then the follow-up question to that is, how do you get that? Because I think that that's something that it's sort of an intangible quality of a coach, is to be able to communicate that to your players, the feeling that I'm going to have your back, I'm going to be here for you no matter what. And I think one of the things that coaches sometimes struggle with that is to disconnect the basketball player from the kid. And so often you have coaches that will just look at the relationship with the basketball player, and so therefore who gets the majority of the coach's time, energy, love, attention? Mm-hmm. The best players, the starters, those are the guys that get the most attention. So I guess the question then that I would have for you is, how do you go about connecting with everybody from the star of your team down to the last player on your roster? What do you do? What do you attribute your ability to make that connection with every player on your roster? How do you go about doing that? And I know part of the answer is every day just through your interactions, but can you point to anything, maybe specifics and just some general guidelines for what you do to try to make sure the kids understand how much you care about them?
Well, we'll have kids, and it won't always be your best player, but, you know, kids come from a bad background, rough home life, things like that. And I'll, you know, a lot of times I'll get those kids in here and, you know, we're ordering shoes or travel gear or, you know, practice gear and stuff like that. And, well, you know, you always have that kid that, you know, he doesn't raise his hand. He's not going to order. And I'll go to him and I'll say, hey, I've got you, man. I'm gonna take care of you. And you end up buying it for him. And, you know, you don't do it for everybody to see, hey, coach, you know, coach is doing this for him. But, you know, a lot of times, like when we go for a go off on a basketball trip and we're coming back on the bus late at night and we stop and eat, and you'll have those kids that sit on the bus, you know, they don't want to get off and because they don't have any money. And I'll tell them, come on, let's go. And they'll say, I didn't bring any money, coach. And I said, I've got you. Let's go. I'm paying tonight. I'm buying tonight. And I said, I've got a rule that I don't eat unless everybody eats, and I'm pretty hungry and I'm pretty big. So let's go. and I'll go get them and I'll, you know,
that's awesome.
And I don't expect them to ever pay me back. You know, I just tell them, you know, a few years ago, I had a kid that moved over here from another school, and he was going to just quit school. I mean, he was just going to come in, and one of my players come to me and said, hey, we've got a pretty good point guard over there walking the halls. I don't know if you know this or not. And I said, well, who is he? And he told me his name, and I didn't know him. And I said, well, is he going to play basketball? And he said, no, he says he's going to quit school. He's going to be ineligible the first semester anyway. I said, well, bring him over here. Let's talk. So I brought him over here, and we were talking. He said, I'm just going to quit school. I can't play basketball. I'm just going to drop out. And I said, well, why don't you come and watch us work out? And if you don't like what you see, you can go ahead and quit. Or if you stay in school, you can stay out here in the bleachers at least and watch our team, and you don't have to go to that home economics class over there. And he said, okay, I will. I said, hey, bring your shoes tomorrow too, because we're going to scrimmage. And he said, you going to let me scrimmage? I said, yeah, I'll let you play with them. And I had some really good players, some guys that could really jump and real athletic. And so he comes out, and it was a Friday, you know, early in the year, August, and he's throwing alley-oops to these guys, and they're hammering it, and he's, you know, he feels important, you know. So he comes over to me, and he says, hey, I don't think I'm going to quit school anymore. I'm going to go get my physical so I can practice with you. I said, hey, the state tournament's not till the second semester anyway. I said, you can sit here and you can learn everything we do, watch and go through practice and everything. Then after Christmas, you'll be ready. So he does. He ends up hitting the shot in the quarterfinals to put us in the semifinals in double overtime. He hits the shot to make us advance, and, you know, he's crying and after the game and everything, and he's hugging my neck. Well, you know, he was only a junior that year. So the next year, he comes to me at the beginning of the year, and he says, coach, I'm homeless. And I said, what do you mean you're homeless? He said, well, my mom is moving back to Hot Springs, and she had a drug problem, and his dad had passed away, and he didn't have anywhere to go. So he said, I'm 18. I need a house that I can rent. And so we found him a place in the district, and his mom actually moved with him for a little while. And I go over to his house one day, and he has no food in the house. He has his phone. His mom had taken his phone card, or his food card and food stamp card, and sold it to somebody, I'm sure for, you know, drugs or whatever. And his truck was broke down, and it broke my heart, man. I walk in his house, and he's got, you know, canned soup and water to drink, and that was it. You know, he's a 17-year-old boy. So I call my wife and I say, you go to the store and you buy this kid some groceries. I mean, load him down. This is heartbreaking. So we end up, you know, I know it's a long story, but he ends up tearing his ACL this senior year, and he had nobody to take care of him. Basketball was the only thing he really had going for him. His family was awful. So since he wasn't playing, my wife and I moved him in with us. You know, he ended up, we took him to a surgery, and we, you know, nursed him back to health. And I told him, I said, I can't play basketball. I'm just lost. I said, well, your role changes now. I said, you get to be a coach. I said, you may be in a, on crutches. I said, but you're going to be at every practice. You're going to be coaching these kids. You're not playing anymore. You're going to coach. And he goes, comes back. He ends up, instead of, not being eligible, he ended up graduating with a 3.8 grade point average, lived with us throughout the rest of his high school. And I told him, I said, man, if you want to go to college, you can live with us. He ended up going to college for 5 years, got his degree, and he's actually a basketball coach here in Arkansas. And, it was one of those deals where I got, I've got 20-year-old twins. I've told you that. And they were born on August 10th. And one day I just asked him, I said, hey, Blevin, when's your birthday? I said, my son wants to buy you something for your birthday. And he said, well, my birthday's on August 10th. So I've actually had three kids at my house with all the same birthday. And it was just one of those things where, if I hadn't gone to his house, I would have never had any idea. But it all started falling into place. You saw why his grades were so bad. You saw why every time you saw a picture of him, he was never smiling. He didn't have anything to smile about. He had a brother that was shot when Blevin was a young kid, 10 or 12 years old. His brother was accidentally shot and he died, and this kid basically had everything in the world going against him, and the only thing that he really had was a game of basketball, and he thought that was taken away from him. But hindsight now, the good Lord had a plan in that. He took it away from him his senior year for him now to be out coaching and making his own way. I asked him one time, what's your dream job? He said, my dream job is doing exactly what you do. And now he's out coaching and making his own living and doing really well for himself. So I know that's a long story, but that's what popped into my head when you asked that. Just making that connection. I see kids all the time and going through this adoption process that we have, it made me really realize that, man, there's a reason why some of these kids act like they do. If you spend a day in their shoes and see what they, dealt with at home every day, you might understand a little bit more about why their behavior's the way it is. And I've really tried. I've tried my best to open myself up to that and just kind of see, if there's a need and anything I can do, I want to help them.
Marty, that's just, again, that's an unbelievable story. It's a fantastic story. I think it's a tremendous way to wrap up the episode, because I think back to what we first started talking about almost an hour and a half ago, and that was the influence that your high school coach had on you to sort of get you to think about the fact that maybe you wanted to follow in his footsteps and become a high school coach and have the same kind of impact on kids that he had on you. And now we wrap up the podcast with a story of you having that same impact on one of your players and what I'm sure you consider to be one of your kids. And so right. I think for coaches out there, that was just a phenomenal story from a very simple question that I asked you of how do you demonstrate the love that you have for your players? How do you get them to know that you care about them as human beings? And I think that story illustrates it perfectly, not only for the young man that you were able to turn his life around, but as you were telling that story, I was not only thinking about the impact that you probably had, obviously, on him, but the impact that you had on the other players who were a part of your team at that time, who saw all the things that you were doing to help that young man to turn his life around. And to me, there's nothing more powerful in coaching than that story that you just shared. And so just thank you, honestly, for sharing that. It was very moving. It was very powerful. And I think that to me, that's the story of coaching. That's what coaching is all about. We can get into all the nuts and bolts, X's and O's, and building the program and all the things we talked about tonight. But ultimately, having an impact on other human beings is really what coaching is all about. So I think as we're coming up here on an hour and a half, that's a perfect place for us to stop and start to wrap things up. So before we do, I want you to share where people can get in contact with you, how they can reach out to you if they've heard the podcast, they want to ask you a question, they want to connect with you. And then if there's any final point that you want to make before we wrap up, you can go ahead and do that. And then I'll jump back in and we'll finish up the episode.
Okay. Well, my email address is marty.smith@kirbytrojans.net. And also, I'm on Twitter. It's @MartySmithOBC22, I think is what it is. And I don't do Facebook, but I also have a personal email account that is CoachMartySmith@yahoo.com.
Perfect. Marty, we can't thank you enough for spending almost an hour and a half with us tonight. It has been a pleasure getting a chance to know you, learn more about you and your program there at Kirby. And we can't thank you enough for spending that time and taking it out of your schedule. So to everyone out there, thanks for listening, and we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Hey everyone, last year at the Junior NBA Summit, I came across an amazing company called iSport 360 and its founder, Ian Goldberg. Their youth sports app gets coaches, players, and parents on the same page. Your team can set goals, share player feedback, training videos, sticker rewards, player evals, and practice assignments. All of this to foster a healthy team communication and culture. If your team or club struggles to keep open lines of communication, especially among team parents, iSport 360 can help. If you want to empower your athletes to have more success, more confidence, and more communication with their teammates, give iSport 360 a try today. Shoot me an email, mike@hoopheadspod.com, or give me a call at 216-392-4059 to learn more.
Being without basketball right now is tough for all of us, so we've partnered with Pro Skills Basketball to offer you a 50% discount on their ultimate shooting guide and video program that will put players on a guided path to becoming the best shooter they can be. With 1 year's worth of workouts that includes games, drills, and competitions, players will gain access to a blueprint showing them what it takes to become an elite level shooter. If you're looking to improve your shooting at home, this program can help. Visit hoopheadspod.com/store to check it out.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.